Welcome to Talk About Talk with Shanti Niven and Desiree Luthi. Shanti and Desiree are professional speakers and trainers of world-class speakers and anyone who wants to improve their oral communication skills and their lives. Listen in as they share their captivating speaker secrets over morning coffee. Tune in weekdays from 7:30 to 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. And don't forget to follow the show or subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.
Good morning.
Good morning, everyone, and welcome back again.
On Wednesday, we have to take the sheet. But on Wednesday, Now, that is a shocking statistic, because where do you get a 10-year-old that even thinks about their sugar, thinks about their weight?
Well, see, the reason, I mean, from that side, I know that's a little bit side topic, but it's because the obesity rate, though, is through the roof in America right now. So these kids need to go on a lot of diets because they're heading toward type 2 diabetes.
I don't agree. I think that any kid who's put on a diet is heading towards even a bigger obesity problem. Here's where it starts from. I'm sorry to jump in like that, but none of my kids had any issues with that. That might have had a bit of podginess as you enter into the...
Yeah, but you've seen the difference coming to America here and the difference in food. Yeah.
It's the parents again. It's the way they're eating, the way they're preparing foods. And so I just think, again, it comes down to modeling, which is exactly what we're going to be talking about with regard to confidence. But yes, weight and all of these things do actually, are there factors. There are factors with confidence. Mm-hmm. Because let's face it, if a child's feeling like they don't look good and they don't feel like they're acceptable, are they going to be able to get up and speak with confidence? No, they're not. Mm-hmm. They're afraid of judgment. But to put a child on a diet is the biggest mistake you can ever make. Ever make, because you start them off with a mindset.
But I think it depends on what diet means, because to me a healthy diet would be a healthy diet.
Yeah, but then you see the moment is it's a psychological thing. Diet is deprivation to most people. Diet is I'm fat, I need to get slim.
Mm-hmm.
So all you do is to change your routines and habits in the home and make delicious, healthy food. And start forbidding, you know, that you should have actually not done this from the very beginning. But it really is honestly true, because I've raised three kids and I know this. I had a mother-in-law living with me, used to try and feed them sugar. I raised my daughter, Candace, didn't even taste sugar. Didn't know what it tasted like. Didn't want it afterwards. So we think that they want all these things, salty and sweet stuff. But it's just the way you raise your kids and how you raise them.
Absolutely. And that's part of the confident, having a confident child. And today we're going into overcoming those fears, those anxieties that children have, that maybe parents even have for their children. Because keep in mind, you start projecting those kind of things. And the reason the obesity, it's such an epidemic here right now. Obesity is such a big problem in this country. And so it's coming from confidence. How can we have fun, active kids that are not just sitting at home behind the computer?
Exactly. The lack of activity is a huge thing.
Exactly. But I know that on the flip side for parents, it's like, well, it's no longer safe for them to go outside. It's no longer safe for them to go ride their bike on the street like I did growing up. I was at the neighbor's house as long as I was home by dark. It's now constant fear that the parents have, because it's, I can't even let my kid outside to play.
Well, here's the big danger, and actually this is probably part of where we're going to talk about where the problem arises, is the biggest recipe for disaster, even when it comes to the kids who are flipping up and shooting up at school and those that are bullying other kids, all of these problems have their root in a couple of conditions. The biggest danger is where children are not socializing. It's even like dogs. In South Africa, for example, where I come from, the dogs are very vicious because they're not taught to socialize. They're there to be guard dogs. So if you instill your fears and your child's having to, as we were in South Africa, they're having to live behind high walls and security fences and they can't go anywhere. And then on top of it, recipe for disaster, this is not the case in South Africa, but certainly here, you use the electronic babysitter. So it's the television or the iPad or the computer. Your children are getting exposed to stuff. I mean, you can put on, you know, they've got these nannies, auto nannies on internet. But, you know, how many, let's be honest, how many parents are actually using this? How many parents are monitoring what their kids are doing? They get onto their phones. There's no way they're going to know. We teach your kids, so we know what they see. Mm-hmm. And they're being exposed to sexual stuff long before they should be. They're being exposed to media telling them how they should look. which is why they develop obsessions about their bodies. And so one of the big statements I'd like to make this morning is that I know as a mother, I've got parents saying, well, my child's shy. And I actually have three children, and everybody sees me as a confident person, but of my three children, two of those are introverts. So I know, and my first child was paralyzed shy. But I also know that children are not naturally inhibited. From the moment they can talk and walk, they are fearless.
What do you mean? When they come out of the womb, they are screaming.
And they're fearless, but they are. When they start walking, they're absolutely fearless. They don't have fears. The fears come from us. And so when we freak out, when we see a child heading towards a staircase and we scream, ah, or we have a hissy fit because of something happening, we start injecting anxiety and fear into our kids. And so that's where it starts, and then it gets compounded for kids. For example, when they're in class and little Bertha gets up to speak in front of the class on show and tell, and she's got a little bit of puppy fat, and the kids start laughing at her or teasing her or saying Bertha the whale or whatever. We've heard stories like this. What happens then, Bertha, after that, does not want to be in front of people speaking, so she's terrified. So this is where these fears start.
The fears, and then they continue to grow. It's the seed has been planted, and it just continues to grow. So I think what we want to get into today is starting to realize that a lot of kids have some social anxiety, especially if they're not exposed to being in a social environment starting at a young age. I've noticed the kids that have parents that are very social, have a lot of dinner parties, inviting friends and family over all the time, or going to friends and family homes for dinner, whatever it is, they are better in social settings. That's from what I've seen. The parents that are not, you know, that are busy, they're working, and they're not as social with their children or not going out as often, these are the kids that are a little bit more inhibited. Now, that's not every single child is like this, but the anxiety starts because they don't know how to socialize with each other and other kids. And similar to what Shanti just said, they get up in front of the classroom, then all of a sudden now they don't want to speak in front of anyone. So how do you get rid of the social anxiety that's now starting to build within the child?
One thing that we have a little bit of an insight here is, well, quite aside from the fact that I've raised three and fostered three and had a lot of experience even at one stage running a children's ministry, so I've already had a lot of involvement with kids, we, Desiree and myself, teach. And so, and our class is very unusual. It's not the normal teacher class. Kids land up really exposing themselves to us, and they're willing to be vulnerable with us, and they share. We've had incredible breakthroughs in classes where kids have broken down crying and really shared their feelings. I had a
very
situation
powerful
that I mentioned on radio the other day with a little boy who is highly advanced. I mean, this kid is just genius and obviously comes from a family where they really push him. And he's really trying hard in my class, but he has a nervous tic in his eye. He's constantly blinking like this. And I thought, okay, I don't know where that comes from, because he's really a hard worker. But when he came out with it in class where we were talking about fears, he said he constantly is criticized by it doesn't matter what he does. He says, my mom just finds something wrong. He says, no matter how well I do, I could have done better. He says, I can't ever do anything right. And this is a really big achiever. I thought, how could a mother be so critical of him? He's just such a hard worker. But that's what happens with a lot of parents, is instead of encouraging them, and then there's also the danger of the other way, by the way, encouraging them for every little achievement.
Which is also the bad thing. You put away your crayons. Yay.
You shaved your hair off, as we
spoke
about
before. Oh, yes, we spoke about last time, yes.
I still can't get over it. Oh, what a clever little Johnny. So you need to be careful that you don't praise them for everything, but that there is a balance.
There's a balance, and that's just the way of life, isn't it? Just there's a balance to everything, and I think realizing that your child has any fear and anxiety, the first thing as a parent is accepting it, but not making the child feel bad. And by the way, there's nothing there's nothing you did wrong either. Everyone has fears. You as an adult have your fears as well. It's normal for a child to have fears. That's what makes them human. And I think it's
not at first, because as we actually say, fears are
learned. They're developed.
They're learned, developed, and planted. Children generally are pretty fearless before these seeds are planted. So we do actually have a huge responsibility. If we react in fear to something, children are very receptive and responsive, and they learn from what they see. So don't tell them to do something. Demonstrate.
Mm-hmm.
And that's very, very important.
But I think it's what I was heading towards is even recognizing those fears, that they have something. I mean, even if it's them, what we spoke about last week as well, is I'm scared of something underneath the bed. You know, there's nothing really that's ever been underneath the bed for a child, but their imagination runs away with them.
Yeah.
And
that's an example of a fear being planted. They watch a movie and suddenly And that's where we need to discuss fears that are rational, fears that aren't, to laugh at all, but also to take it seriously, as you said, and to listen. Can I tell you what's key, which we've said over and over again? Parents actually do not listen to their kids.
Mm.
How many times have I asked that question in class?
I asked my kids that last week. I said, do you feel like you guys are listened to? Do people listen to you? Their teachers don't. One of them said he came in and asked, he was absent, and he says he knows it's his responsibility to ask other kids what the homework was, but he got to school late. He didn't have anyone around. He wanted to make sure it was due in on time. So he went to the teacher to ask her, and she was in the classroom watching Netflix and said, do not bother me. And she said, go find out from someone else. And so he wanted to ask her some questions, and he said, okay, I looked on the wall. I saw the homework, but he wanted to ask her some questions to make sure he could do the homework correctly. And she's like, why are you asking me? And he's getting yelled at. And this is where the fear. Now he's scared to approach teachers. Now it's been planted in his head now. And he's told me, now I'm scared to ask my teachers any questions because I'm scared I'm going to get yelled at now, that I'm doing something wrong. So even asking a question to get some help, some advice, to do something that she's requiring and make it even better for her, that's what he's trying to do to make her proud, but himself proud, getting stuff done.
He deserved praise for that.
Exactly. And she's too busy watching, and he named the show that she was watching, and he saw her doing that. And in his mind, it's like, okay, well, her show is more important than me. And now I'm scared I can't even ask my own teacher questions.
Look, there is another side to it. Obviously, the teacher may have, there's a protocol that she's told them to follow and he's not following it. But still, a stop, eye contact is something we're trying to tell teachers. What I used to do with my children, for example, Candace remembers this very well, is that when something wasn't right, I used to kneel down, I'd hold her hand and I'd look her directly in the eyes and I would say to her, Candace,
what's wrong?
And I would express what I'd ask her. I'd say, do you think it was good for you to go and get onto the counter on this chair and to do this? And she'd say, no, Mommy. And I'd say, do you understand why I'm upset? Because I don't want you to get hurt. I'd express it and make her understand.
But see, that's where the clear lines of communication are so important. And she understands. But it's also a respect thing. You're giving her respect and not yelling at her. And then she's all freaked out that she's doing something wrong. But you're giving her that respect and calm communication. Being calm about these things is such a key point. And I'm not saying to let your child run all over you. Johnny, stop screaming. Stop screaming now, Johnny. No, that's not what we mean. There's a discipline, but when you're trying to communicate with your child and express something.
It's a very simple, I honestly can save parents a lot of time and hassle. In fact, we're going to be running parenting classes, which we will let you know about. But there is balance in all things. For example, when I say listen to your child, I don't mean every time they squeak, you get down on your knees and you hold their hands and you look into their eyes. They also have to understand that you have other activities. You may be busy speaking with daddy or with somebody else, and that's a time for them to be respectful and for them to learn listening skills. So there is a balance between where you listen to them and show them respect and where they need to listen to you. And that's something that we will be talking about in maybe future episodes, but also we'll be running these parenting classes, which will be very valuable. Because honestly, I'm not saying this boastfully, but I raised three kids who are so respectful, even when they were going through teens. And as a teen, where they're running away from you, my kids were running towards me, and all their friends used to come and chat to me. Now, I wasn't the big buddy.
But you were there to
listen. There was a balance, whereas I was listening to them without judgment.
But you took the time to listen to them and make sure that they felt that they were heard, that their opinion mattered, that what they were saying was understood, and they weren't getting judged for it. And I think that's a most important thing. When I ask my kids in the class the same question, what is it that you're afraid of when you're speaking? It's the fear of judgment. Everything comes down to that same
thing. That's exactly what we did with all of our kids. We spoke to them about their fears, and what they normally do is they come up with superficial things. Like, for example, they'll say, oh, I'm afraid I'm going to trip and fall when I go up. Oh, I'm afraid that I'll forget my lines. Oh, I'm afraid. I wrote on the board every single
That's
little
That's what I did.
Yes, yeah.
And they said, or I'm irrelevant, that what I'm saying they don't care about, or it's stupid, or they don't like it.
The common ones is they'll laugh at me, or they won't laugh when I'm trying to be funny. There's all of these projections. And when I said to them, I said, okay, let's look at all these fears, and I've written them all over the board. I said, when it comes down to it, there's only one thing you're afraid of. And I said, I'm going to give, because I run on a point system, I'm going to give 5 points to who can never figure it out. And of course, very quickly, it does come out to all these little things. It comes out to our desire to be accepted and significant. We want to fit in. We want others, especially kids. They really want to fit in. They want to be popular.
Well, they're trying to find themselves. They're in this huge world, and they're trying to find their place in this world. And there's so much happening, and it's overwhelming for a child.
And then you've got, the shyer, more introvert ones don't want to stand out. The more confident ones do want to stand out, but they don't want to be made a fool of. So there's all these little factors that come into play. But then we say, eventually, it comes down to one fear, and the fear is the fear of judgment. We're afraid of people judging. And then I turn it around on them, and I say, okay, when somebody else speaks, do you judge them? So let's start thinking about what judgments do you make?
My kids said absolutely not. They do not judge anyone. If anything, they're there to cheer them on and root them on and say, hey, you got this. Even if they messed up or froze, all they're doing in their head is saying, oh, my gosh, come on, you can do it. Just say something, say something.
Well, if you create that environment, which is what we do, because in other classes we have heard of people going, ha, 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 and laughing at the poor kid. In fact, my very first, I did a class at a particular school, Canyon School, and my first experience in the class is I got them all to introduce themselves, and one little girl got up and said something, but she flubbed it because she was a little shy, and they started laughing.
So immediately you put a stop to that.
So immediately I said, what are you laughing at? I got it round to her. I said, right, there's one thing in this class, you're going to leave your judgment at the door. Once you've done that and you've said to these kids, no matter what you do, no matter how badly you mess up, it's okay in this class.
The other thing that I do with my kids is I tell them, we're a team. This classroom, when we're in here, we're a unit. We support each other. I don't want to hear any bad mouthing. We are here to support each other just like you would out on the soccer field. We are here. If we're not growing together, we are not growing at all. If one person falls behind, all of us are falling behind. I'm not accepting anyone becoming more advanced. We help each other in this class. As a leader,
there will always be kids who,
but it happens. But I'm saying as a leader, but what I'm trying to get them to see in the mindset is you don't let anyone fall behind. So as a leader in the classroom, if you're very advanced, if you're very advanced, you're taking that person's hand, you're helping them, encouraging them, and motivating them to move forward. Because it's all of us. It's not just me as the teacher, not just you as a parent. It's all of us as a unit together, supporting each other and helping each other overcome whatever it is that we have,
That's
any
why
challenges.
When I deal with a parent who, I know I just sound biased. The reason we started this kids program is because we really want to help kids become confident speakers. I mean, this is, I've got to tell you folks, obviously they go, well, this is your business. Of course, you're going to say this. If I had to choose between training adults, which we have a very successful adult section, and training kids from a completely financial point of view, obviously adults bring in a lot more money. But our hearts and our passion is towards providing kids these skills because every day we're seeing little miracles. We really are. Desi and I often talk with each other and say, wow, we actually have really been able to make a difference in so-and-so's life. And it's every single one of them, I've got to tell you this. And where I don't understand is when parents don't get how important it is to have these skills. That this, a lot, they've really focused on the sport. They very much focus on the educational side and don't realize that even to be a sportsman,
although important to stay coordinated, trust me, we are all about that as well. We're not denying that. But these skills are so important. But we even see adults who are still now in their 50s, 60s who are now coming into our workshops because they realize, I need to do this now. I need to get my communication skills right. I've waited all these years. But if you can get these kids this overcoming the fear, or at least understanding what it is that they're feeling, because it's more than just speaking what we're teaching. It's the confidence. We're building a child who knows what emotions are going on and realizing it's okay. It's okay to feel what you're feeling and how to use it to your advantage, actually.
Exactly. We've been struggling for quite a while to explain in a very accurate way what it is. Because people think we run public speaking classes.
Uh-uh.
But in fact, the closer description would be confidence and communication.
Confidence and communication.
Because it's all about, and communications is a lot about listening. It's a lot about observation. But it all comes back to one thing. I always tell parents that we're teaching them more about thinking than we are about them actually uttering sounds. Because you've got two extremes of kids. You've got a child who speaks all the time but doesn't listen. And then you've got a child who listens a lot but doesn't speak at all. And what we're trying to do is we're trying to create balance.
Yeah.
So we want to give them a voice so they can be heard, and we really recommend as parents let's make a little challenge to all of you listening to this show. And that is, make time. Now, you don't need to be every time your child squeaks. In fact, I would really highly recommend that if your child squeaks and demands attention, you don't just jump to it. Because when you do that, you give them this message that, oh, I'm the boss. I'm going to tell you folks, unless you establish who's boss, and it's I'm boss, we've seen this over and over again, that you are in charge, that they have a respect for you to do that, but that you make time for face-to-face, eyeball-to-eyeball, warm, loving communication, that you make time every day for reading stories for your little, for your younger
connecting
ones.
With them, connecting with them. This is one of the most important things, is connection. And even as parents, connecting with your child, teachers, taking a moment to connect with your students, therapists already connect with their clientele, but anyone that's working with kids, it's connecting with them. Human connection is so important, and kids need it just as much as adults do.
The other thing is, if teachers are listening to this, here's some advice. There is actually a particular educational method which I have, let's just put it this way, I've studied a lot of the different types of educational methods, of, or the methods of teaching. And one that I really like is, because one thing we know, you learn more. In fact, the way to learn the best, at the right at the top of the heap, as we know, is to actually teach someone else.
Mm-hmm.
I went right through school through not studying ever. I'm a natural teacher. I used to just teach others. And I'd have my book there, I'd be teaching others, and I'd learn it that way. So I was always teaching people. And that's the best way to learn. And so if as teachers, you create discussions in the classroom where kids are talking about what and teaching again. So create open discussions, roundtable discussions, where you let every child have a voice, maybe go around the room.
So important to let them have a voice and start letting that dialogue flow, even if it's not just one at a time, letting the conversation flow, because these kids start to learn how to have a conversation and how ideas trigger different ideas and how different thoughts trigger different thoughts. And
here's
so
the big trick.
Powerful.
Not in the way that you would normally do it in class, where you ask a question and if they get it wrong, everybody laughs at them. You've got to have discussions where nothing's wrong. You've got to have open-ended discussions where the words I feel. So what you would do is you'd be talking, let's say you're a history teacher. You're talking about a particular time in history. And what you've got to be doing as a teacher, which is what Desiree and I teach. We recently ran a training program for a very big school. We trained over 40 teachers. And one of the things we talk about is developing a story. So even in math, we've watched how effective this is. You make it concrete, make it real,
show
make
the
it
examples,
visual.
Yeah.
History, the same thing. It should be like a movie. They should be getting wrapped up in the story of the time. And history can be very exciting and very interesting. And so you tell the story of the time, and then you say to the kids, now imagine you were living in that time. How would you respond? How would you feel? And that's where the discussion comes about, is how they feel. So there's no right or wrong answers, because if, well, what year was Napoleon killed, and the child doesn't know the answer, you're putting that child on the spot. Maybe they go blank because there's performance anxiety. The other kids laugh, and boy, let me tell you something, that's where a huge weed seed of anxiety is going to be buried.
I'll never forget when I was in elementary school, for example, and it was going around, we had to go read around the room. So you knew that, okay, Shanti, you're reading one paragraph, Desiree, you're going to read after her, and you go down the line around the classroom. And I would not even be, during story time, whenever we were doing that, I wasn't even paying attention to anyone else and what they were saying, because I was reading mine to make sure that when I spoke, I was clear, that I knew the words, the vocabulary in it, that I wouldn't mess it up, that I spoke clearly and it made sense. Because now everyone is listening to me. Well, so I think, but then I realized soon after that everyone's doing the same thing.
I was just going to say, that's the whole, the lie that we tell ourselves. Because we're so self-absorbed, and even kids are very self-absorbed. It's all about them. And so I think really, honestly, if you open up discussion, instead of making them, putting them on the spot where they can make a fool of themselves.
But making them feel confident that they're the heroes in the class, that they're right no matter what they say. There's never... And I don't disagree. I think it's important, not saying that they always are right. There's important to get that feedback where they need to, they can't just shout out wrong answers all the time. But
here's how I handle that, though. In a class where I ask questions, I don't pick on somebody to put them on the spot, but I will ask, okay, who knows the answer, and they get points for having the answer. But here's the thing. If they don't give me the right answer, because I've got one little boy in one of my classes whose hand goes up every time.
I was just going to say this. Mine too. Yeah.
He just, it doesn't matter what.
But
and then
because
when I
you've
ask him,
created an environment, I just wanted to add this thing, because you've created an environment, same with my classes, where they feel comfortable enough to raise their hand whether they know the answer or not. even if they don't have an answer, they are feel confident enough to speak out with whatever they want to say.
Exactly. And they'll never be made a fool of. But this little boy, I'll ask him, so I'll say, yes, okay, what did you want to say? And invariably, he's pretty new to my class, so we're still in the stage where he'll say something that is really not right. It's not correct. But instead of me saying that's completely wrong,
stupid,
I'll say, okay, so what are you thinking?
Yes.
Where's your thinking? So I can try and establish, what were you thinking about?
But taking an extra second
what
to
made
do that.
You think that? And I get to the bottom of that. And then the way that I phrase it is I'll always say, well, that's not the answer I'm looking for. Is there anybody else who would have...
But they're not. Don't discount it.
No.
And trust me, you as an educator or even as a parent, take that track that their mind is on and try to pull it into where you can take something that they said and pull it into what you're looking for to help them realize that connection. Because as humans, we're always trying to find those connection points in the brain. What is it that she's trying to say? What is it that I'm trying to say so I can send that correct information back out? So it's working together as a team. It's all of us. It's not communication doesn't just work one way. It's two-way.
It's absolutely
every way. Everyone is communicating.
And by the
all
way,
time.
Teachers really do have as much, you know, they always say it's the parent has the greater responsibility, but teachers, I mean, if you think about back in your teachers and how your teachers can mess you up, I mean, mess you up for life. I know that teachers I went to a conference in a while and there were nuns that actually could have destroyed me because they were so actually very cruel. They weren't very nice people, but there were a few that were nice. But
living in that state of fear is no fun either.
Oh, I remember there was one particular nun that I was terrified of. Mm. I remember I put my head down like this and looked down. She always wore stockings and she had black hair on her legs. And I'd see this black hair curling underneath the stockings and I'd think, oh, the hell is going to rain down upon me. But I was in trouble a lot because I was a daydreamer. So I was always looking out the window and daydreaming. And I remember the rap of the ruler, bam.
But don't please. And that's, I want to just add that in. Do not discourage your child from being a daydreamer. Encourage it because as they get older, that creativity, that imagination flies out the window so quickly because they feel that they're being told, okay, well, daydreaming, imagination is actually bad. You need to grow up now. It's no longer fantasy world. It's reality.
Here's the thing, teachers. Here's what I'm going to say to you. If somebody's daydreaming in your class, it's your fault, not theirs.
Can we repeat that one more time, please?
If somebody's daydreaming in your class, it's your fault, not theirs. Take the ruler out and give yourself a snap on the knuckles. Here's why I say this, because I was the ultimate daydreamer. Clearly, I had a great imagination. I'm very artistically minded, so I was off in another world most of the time until I got a teacher by the name of Anne Hamlin.
That engaged you.
And Anne Hamlin was my English teacher. Also, she was the drama teacher. She walked in the class on the first day, and there was nothing really extraordinary about the way she looked. I'd love to know what happened to her, actually. But the class were rowdy and making noise, not even paying attention. She stood in front of the room, and she was an opera singer. And she belted, she just went, I can't do it. I wish I could. You know the very high-pitched
opera singing. That will grab
that
anyone's
almost
attention.
Could break the windows, and she went into this rise up into this impossibly high note, and every child stopped and looked at her and thought, what is going on? And then she stopped, she was silent, she waited, she smiled, and she didn't even explain why she did that. She just went straight into it. But because she was a performer, our classes, it was story time for me. It was, everything was made to be interesting by her because she had this dramatic presence. And I never daydreamed in Anne Hamlin's class, not once. I was hanging on to her every word.
Same with my kids, and I get into this motivational mode with them, and I get so intense with them, and I explain why, and I'm always going back, why do you need this for life, if anything? And I explain what's going on currently in business, the articles that I'm reading, what's happening right now to help them to start recognizing why this is so important. And with that, I had one kid, I said, we may be possibly doing summer school, and a few kids in the class were in their mind thinking, okay, well, I'm going to fail this year then so I can take your class in summer school. I'm like, oh, thank you. Oh, so sweet. They want to fail their classes just because they know how valuable this class is and they want to make sure
what?
They're in it. But that's not why summer school is not the same for that.
It's
funny.
Kids come through captivating kids and they start off reluctant because we've had parents even forcing their children and knowing that they need help. And you find the child sitting outside crying, oh, I don't want to be in public speaking.
I want to go to Legos.
Yes, or make jewelry or go to magic show or whatever. But once they step in the door and we smile at them.
And have fun.
We know. We've got them. I mean, have we?
I have to force my kids. I have to force my kids out of class. I'm always after school. I'm in the last class of the day. They have to be forced to leave my classroom. I am they're forced. They have to
get
I have to kick them out. I have to say, you guys, it's time to go. And it's they love the class so much and they want to play the games. They will stay. They're like, no, just let's keep playing, let's keep going. And they want to stay and be involved because they know how important it is and they
they're
see the change.
They're starved for it.
They're starved and they love the attention and they love. My kids love telling me stories about their day, what's happening with their friends. And even if sometimes it's the gossip that's going on, they want to know how do they handle it? How can they communicate better so they don't deal with the same issue? So it's constantly real life situations. What can I do?
Oh my goodness, it makes you realize how much they need a voice.
They
and
do.
You know what you were saying, I obviously have strict class times, but my kids even the other day conned me in that I was supposed to be apparently finishing my schedule said 11:15 for the end of this particular class. They said, no, it's 11:30.
11:30 made you sound like you're wrong.
I ended up having a 15-minute lunch because of these little rascals because they just love class so much. And that makes us feel good, obviously, but we must be doing something right. So here are some tips before we end off the show. Number one, make time every day. I don't care how busy you are, how much stress you are, have on your plate.
Extra 5 minutes is all it takes, guys.
Exactly. When you come home or your first interaction with a child, I watch parents picking their children up and their mothers are harassed and they're anxious and the kids are all buzzing around. Take time to greet each one of your children when you see them, first see them. Say, hello, get down to their level, look into their eyes, how was your day? Give them just a couple of minutes at that point.
But there's great books out there as well and we will get into this as well if you listen in because they're great conversation starters that are not just how was your day? And the reply is, oh, it was fine. It's really getting them to open up about their day and what happened today and getting them to have a conversation with you.
If you ask the same questions every day,
they're going to get,
interrogation.
Exactly. So how was your day?
Yeah.
That's what's always the same thing. So how was your day? It's always, how was school today? And it's never really getting into certain questions. You want the kids to really start opening up and take some time to let them listen.
If you know what's going on in their lives, for starters, you could be saying they know. For example, at the school that I'm teaching at on Mondays, I teach on Mondays at a private school, Rockland Academy. If you're a parent and your child's got that class on a Monday, you can say, oh, how was your class with Auntie Shanti? Did you do your speech?
But even rephrasing it, not just how was it, tell me about your class today.
Yeah, exactly. That's
such a difference.
But if you know what's going on in their lives, it can be a little, and in a way that you're not cross-questioning them.
But
you're not checking up on them.
Engage and have a conversation. And it goes back to for parents as well. Teachers, same thing. It's learn how to have a conversation, not only with the children, but with adults as well. Taking those answers and saying, and then creating a conversation, telling them about your day as well, getting them involved, not needing to tell your child everything, of course, about your personal life. There's filtering. I mean, let's filter here. We're, adults, but really engaging your kids. Your kids want to know. They want to feel heard. I tell my kids personal stories. I tell them stuff that I think would be relevant so I can relate to them, and they feel that the problems that they're going through are actually normal, that they're not different, that this is okay to deal with what they're dealing with. And because of that, it just makes it so much more fun and powerful. They're running to my class. They're so excited to be there. And same thing.
And that's obviously why we do what we do. We love it because we're making a massive difference in the lives of these kids. We really are. Every single day we can tell you wonderful stories, but we are in this place where we can help you to do the best for your kids. We know that you have a lot on your plate. We know you work hard. We know at the end of the day you just want to put your feet up and then you're going to think about dinner and the kids. But what I'm suggesting to you is even if it's 5 minutes, 5 minutes of deep and real connection.
Even at breakfast before school, at dinner, find great times to meet with your kids. And trust me, parents, teachers, all of you out there, we know you're busy. We're busy too. We get that the schedule, and being a parent where both parents are now working most of the time, that you need to work all day, and then you have to pick up your child from daycare, then go home and make dinner. And we understand the laundry list of things that you have to do, going to soccer, sports, and everything. But take that time, whatever time you have, because also these kids grow up so fast. They grow up before your eyes, and it makes me want to cry. And I see these kids just blossoming. And you don't want to open your eyes one day and realize they're already gone. And did you really help them along the way? Give them these great opportunities now.
Rather don't have kids. If you're going to have kids.
Just don't have kids, actually.
Yeah. No, I mean, really. If you don't have time for kids, you shouldn't have had them.
Yeah.
If you've got them, you have to. They come first in your life. And I'm just going to say this to you folks. If I offend you, I'm sorry. Switch your radio off. Don't listen to us ever again. Because if you've had kids, just because you wanted to reproduce, wrong reason. You have the most awesome responsibility in your hands, and you can make or break these
kids.
This
is your future. This is the future. These kids are the future.
So just catch a wake up and stop being selfish. Find time. It's more important than anything else. You have raised individual human beings, and you need to take this seriously. It's important.
And this, at the end of the day, will raise confident kids because it starts with you. They see how you communicate with them. They see, by the way, they're always watching you, so they see how you're communicating with your friends, other parents at the school, or even the teachers. They watch you with other teachers, how you speak with each other. They're constantly watching, and even if the child doesn't realize that they're actually copying you, they are. It's just they're always looking and observing, and I notice that even with my kids. I speak in a certain way. I move around the room. When I'm teaching, I get very excited. I move around so they're all paying attention. But I notice when they get up to speak, now they're moving around the room. So they do. They're watching you all the time.
I watched videos of Desiree's
class. Oh, she was laughing. She's like, they're mini Desiree's.
And I so in the beginning, when Desi was mentored by me, people used to call her mini me, which used to upset her because she's her own individual person.
Sammy, I was honored, actually, that I was.
But, yeah, well, people knew. Because I was mentoring you, something of me was coming out, but now I'm seeing the same thing with your kids, as I'm seeing little mannerisms of you, which you have these very unique mannerisms. And I always say emulation is the greatest form of flattery. It really is. So you're making a big impact, because when I see that, I can smile. And I know that you're doing a fabulous job. And
these kids are fantastic. And these kids are fantastic. And kids are amazing if you give them a chance. They all, at the end of the day, just same as adults. I see it with my friends my age. I see it with all adults, the acceptance, wanting to be heard, wanting to feel like you have something that matters. Guide them. Guide these kids. They're looking up to you. And I realized my kids' biggest fear is when I asked them, I wanted them to do an open house for their school, and they're my best kids in the class, their biggest fear is, what happens if we mess up and disappoint you? They want to do it right. And they know that I 100% approve of them, but they just want to make sure that this class, they love it so much. They want to present the best possible class for everyone. They want everyone to see how much this class has changed their life, but they are scared that they're not going to live up to what they have in their head. But once again, get rid of those negative thoughts. That's another important point is as adults, we have our negative thoughts and it's overcoming them. For kids, I was going through this with my class. Everything is a choice. Every day you have choices that you make. Make sure that your negative thoughts go away. Choose positive thoughts. Choose that everything will be okay.
The thing is, whatever you focus upon grows.
Yeah.
So you can't say just make negative thoughts go away. What you need to do.
Well, try. I mean, that's, I mean, yes.
Well, what I was saying is when you have a negative thought, which helped me, and this is just something that might help you as well, whatever you focus upon and obsess over is going to grow. So I have little thoughts that I entertain. The moment you start entertaining it starts to be magnified. The way to do it with your brain is always to distract yourself. So put yourself into another mode. And what I do is then I think about the things that make me happy. Those other positive things. So it's just a shift in your thinking. Rather than just to say make them go away, which is not
easy for a lot of people. It's accepting those thoughts as well. But then you have a choice is what I was really trying to
whether
get to
you entertain
as well.
It
whether you entertain it or not. And same with the kids. When they have these negative thoughts that they're approaching, at least they feel comfortable enough to tell me that they're feeling this way, we find solutions. We have a conversation about
it. We actually call it in our – we're going way over time now, but
yes,
we call it in our classroom. I always say to them, we have survival tactics and we have toolkits. So I say, here, I'm going to give you strategies. So if you're afraid of your zipper being undone, okay, here's a way to make sure that that doesn't happen. You're afraid of forgetting your lines. Let's see how we can come up with a strategy.
And this is my favorite, I want to just add in, this is one of my favorite things is no matter what, adults or kids, no matter what you're dealing with, any anxiety about anything, write down what the worst possible situation is going to be. Write it all out. And then give yourself answers for each one so you know that no matter what situation happens, you know how to handle it already. You're prepared for the unprepared.
And even, I always say, worst case scenario, the worst thing that you can imagine happens, guess what you do? Laugh it off. Because when you're laughing the loudest, let's say you trip and fall or whatever, if you're the one, I watched a little skit on YouTube once where all these models walking down the ramps and they're looking particularly
glamorous. Oh, and then they all fall down.
And then the shoe wobble and they fall.
Oh, that's so scary.
But you know what's really amazing?
The ones that get up and
They were models that handled it differently. Some were flustered and then they get up and they wobble more and fall down
again. Because
you're
trying to be professional in front of everyone.
But there was one girl that really stood out for me because she fell and as she tried to get up, she fell again and she just kind of shrugged her shoulders and laughed and the audience were laughing.
But they love her for that.
And it just endeared her to the audience. And so What I always say to people, if you really mess up, laugh it off. And we tell the kids that as well. So next time you think you've made a fool of yourself, be the first one to laugh. Mm-hmm. And it's a great strategy. It works.
Absolutely. And so we went over time today, but we couldn't help it. We love what we do with our kids program, and we can go on and on. So continue for this month is going over the social anxiety, helping your kids overcome these fears that they have, developing confident, captivating kids.
And the confident kids, helping them to because bear in mind, a lot of the confident kids come across sometimes to other kids as being overconfident. So as we said, there's a bit of balance with that. How we
using
can
it, their ability.
Get them to be better communicators, listen more. And of course, you know, I always use Dale Carnegie's lines, how to win friends and influence people.
That's right.
Great skills you could teach your kids. Right, folks, and with that, we wish you, as always, to
stay captivating.